Good morning. This is Jerry Erschbeck along with Tom McCurry. And with us is Chad Bates. We're going to talk about lawns, gardens, and a couple other odds and ends when we get back after our brief few words from our sponsors.
This is Wade Brew, Market President with Pinnacle Bank. Pinnacle Bank has been serving the lending needs of farmers, ranchers, and commercial business owners in the Wyobraska area, where we've called home for over 100 years. Let us put our resources to work for you with local decision-making from a family-owned bank. Give us a call or visit us at www.wypinnbank.com. Pinnacle Bank, Torrington and Mitchell, the way banking should be. Member FDIC.
With spring comes outdoor grilling, and Century Lumber in Torrington has you covered. They have huge savings on charbroil grills priced at under $400. There's also closeout pricing on Green Mountain grills and Blackstone griddles. And while you're in, see the new grill from Green Mountain with Wi-Fi capabilities, taking grilling to a whole new level. It's on the showroom floor now at Century Lumber in Torrington.
Ready to make your house the envy of the neighborhood? Then your first stop should be Great Gardens in Torrington, the region's largest and most gorgeous independent garden center. Stocked full of annuals, hanging baskets, veggies, perennials, trees, and shrubs, they have all of your gardening needs covered. They even have a large selection of decor to bring that wow factor to your yard and garden. Open year-round and ready for you now. Stop into Great Gardens, 1 mile west of Main Street in Torrington.
Concrete is hard. That's why you should hire J-Built Homes for your next concrete project. Jeff and the crew have experience in all different kinds of concrete designs with professional results. Take one look at J-Built Homes' website, jbuiltwyo.com, and the finished jobs speak for themselves. From driveways to patios, homes, or commercial projects, there's not a job too big or too small. Call Jeff today for a free estimate at 307-631-4449.
It's a plus when you know you can count on Landscaping Plus for not only your lawn and garden care around your home or office, but the plus comes in when the snow flies, as they'll take care of all that snow removal from driveways, sidewalks, and parking lots, home or business. Just give Rob a call at 532-6067 and set up all this year's snow removal from now till the last flake flies. That's Landscaping Plus, 532-6067, Torrington.
All right, hey, welcome back. This is the Lawn and Garden Show for March and our last winter edition. Tom John, thanks for joining us today.
Always, Jerry. I have a ball.
Yeah, well, it's always a good time. Shad, thanks for coming in.
Absolutely.
You know, this is a little different than wrestling, football, volleyball. What else do you do?
As far as broadcasting?
Yeah.
Little League Baseball. We do about six of those games every year. Then we do most of, if not all of, the Legion Baseball. And then I do volleyball in the fall and fill in for football and wrestling and hopeful to do some softball because softball's coming this spring.
It is coming this spring.
Yep.
Fast pitch underhand?
Yes. Yep.
Those are amazing. Some of those girls can really throw that ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I coached my daughters in softball, and my youngest one got to play in a national tournament a couple years, and it's something else to see a 12-year-old throw the ball 65 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen it on TV, and some of them approach 80, 90, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, that is just phenomenal.
Coaching girls baseball's got to be a neat thing for sure.
Yeah, it was an experience. It was something that I'll always cherish, but it's also one of those things when you're coaching your own daughter that you actually, I think you end up being harder on them.
Harder on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, coach.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, hey, before we got started, we were talking about tomatoes and how seemingly a lot of us have had wilt issues. I asked you if you cleaned your cages, and you said just by the rain. Well, a little bleach solution in water, and I was told by some of the old boys, you always want to just rinse those off with a little bleach water. And that's number one. And number two, as Tom said, and I think you already said this, that you do a lot of crop rotation.
Yeah. You know, we first experienced the wilting. We had no idea what was going on. We have friends that are big gardeners. And so they told us. And so the next year, I mean, we've had our tomato plants in about four different spots in our garden. And seemingly keeps coming back year after year. But
same with us. We've had a lot of trouble. Tom says that you should pick out what? when you look at the store?
Oh, Bursarium wilt resistant. And try to do a 3-year rotation. If you can't do that, just make sure you rotate. And also the soil type around here is just so alkaline.
That's a high pH, correct?
High pH, and if you drop it by using sulfur, what sulfur does, it lets you take up other nutrients in the soil. It drops the pH, and then the plant can take up some really interesting things like iron, nitrogen, just those basic things.
So I did a little research, and of course that's just asking Google, right? But they said anywhere from 35 to 56 pounds per 1,000 square feet, and not to put on more than 20 pounds at a time. Okay.
Do you till that in?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Because if not, it'd just lay on the surface, and you actually need it in that 6-inch root bed area. And so, you know, I think that probably the best time to do it would maybe be in the fall. But if you're not doing fall, you should do spring, and you may be doing spring and fall. We have voles, so I'm also using the sulfur to try to make my voles go to my neighbor's house. it's a kind of a yicky thing to do to your neighbors, but it's a yicky to have a vole. You know, I dislike the old time West theory of kicking a tumbleweed up and over the fence. I've tried to kill these voles. I've not had good luck, so I'm trying to manage them.
Oh, absolutely.
So at any rate, some sulfur, and then you know, there's different kinds of sulfur in it. They recommended elemental sulfur. It's a small disc kind of looking sulfur.
They're yellow.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I've seen that.
Have a great odor. Makes you think you're in Thermopolis.
There you go. Yeah.
Oh, it smells kind of like rotten eggs.
Yeah, kind of like you're in Thermopolis. without the warm waters to soothe you.
Now, which side of the river do you live on?
The north side. We live, and actually, I guess, relatively close to the river in Rawhide. It was an old Rawhide addition. Sure. I remember growing up and had friends that lived on McKenna Road, and it was on the west side of McKenna, and that was a farm where we live, that whole area.
Really?
Yes.
Now, I recall when McKenna was out there, didn't he sell Honda motorcycles?
Yeah, he did.
He did. Yeah. He did.
He was an airline pilot, too.
Was he really?
An airplane pilot.
Remember, we have the irrigation ditch that runs next to Highway 8526 into town, and by the trailer court out there.
Right.
And right here close to the radio station. That's right, our property line's right on that back.
So you can't use that water, though.
I'm not sure anybody would really know how. If I did, I could maybe pipe it over.
This is the radio now. Come on.
Oh, yeah. No, I could never
No,
do that.
I'd never
no,
use that water.
Heck no.
So, yeah, I always thought if you lived on the river, could you just divert the water out of the water, and then if you diverted back into the water? And the answer is probably no to that, too.
Well, people have water rights, and if they have the water right, as much as I know about it, which isn't much, but you can't use their water.
Now, on the way between Shoshone and
Thermopolis, Riverton,
there was a guy that lived right on the river, and he did that, and he had a little trout farm there, a little pond, and the water came in and the water came out, but it was just a little hole, a little puddle, you know. Well, it was a pretty good puddle because he had some trout there.
I can remember years ago when they built the back nine at the golf course.
Yeah.
Because it's right next to the river, and there's overflow ditches that would run through there, and they were dry most of the time. And I know that there was a state engineer that came in and said you cannot divert the water to run through those and back into the river. They would not allow that.
Wow.
Yeah.
In case they picked up contaminants or something.
I didn't get that knee-deep into how as to why, but I just know that they were told, no, that that's for the excess. When the river gets real high, then there would be water running through there.
Yeah. Now, we got to visit, Jeff Edwards and I got to visit with you during a Christmas party for KGUS, and you had said that you had a tendency to throw on quite a bit of cow manure.
Yeah. So after our conversation that night where I realized that I was only needed a couple shovelfuls or so of manure.
That's what he recommended. Yeah. And you know, I've been guilty of that before as well. But, you know, when we raised pumpkins for, 7-8 years, and we had a friend with Terry Lofink, and Terry put on about 3 or 4 of those tandem axle manure spreaders on a football field size. And I'm telling you, that was way too much manure. But we only did that once every 3 years, and you know, it was way fertile. It had a lot of nitrogen in it, but I can't help but think that it had a lot of salt as well.
The salt's a big problem because cows with salt licks, they need salt to
right.
digest because they got a rumen. And it's very difficult to get it right. And of course, Jeff, you guys are right. You don't want to use too much.
Too much. So from washing your equipment, utilizing a resistant tomato and utilizing a kind of a well-balanced fertilizer like a 12-12-12 or a 10-10-10 is kind of what is recommended. But doing some more research on tomatoes, these are a few tips that I found. One, you put a fish head in the hole. Two, you put 2 aspirins in the hole, some coffee grounds, some bone meal, 1 or 2 tablespoons of Epsom salts, and some eggshells. Tomatoes are really prone to end rot, and isn't end rot because of calcium deficiency?
Well, that is, and
watering.
Inconsistent watering is difficult.
You mean you can't let your neighbor water when you're gone on vacation and he only like waters the day before you come home?
So it looks like it's watered. So with the coffee grounds, are you talking coffee grounds that have been brewed?
That have been brewed.
Okay, because I have a lot of coffee grounds.
Well, you had said when we were visiting, you kind of have been experimenting with grinding coffee, buying green, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Green, and then roasting them yourself. Is that right. in your regular kitchen oven?
So, no. Actually, my brother and I, Shay Bates, have a coffee roasting company. We call it Bates Brothers Coffee. And we have 2 roasters. We started out with a 2.5-pound roaster. So you could roast 2.5 pounds of green coffee at once, which would roast down to about 2 pounds. And then...
Wow, you lose that much moisture?
Yeah. You lose, they say, anywhere between 78 and 81% of the weight of the bean is what remains. So we lose about 21%.
You know, I've never spoken to a coffee roaster. I've spoken to a coffee grower. We had a locksmith that moved from Torrington to Hawaii to fulfill a dream of growing coffee in Hawaii. And he leases the land. I guess you can't buy it, but he leases the land. And he said rainfall is just absolutely crazy in Hawaii.
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually in Hawaii and then the continental United States, they do grow some coffee in the San Diego area outside of in the mountains, in the hills. They call them mountains, but they're hills.
Right.
And then the only other place is it would be Puerto Rico that they would grow coffee in the United States.
Huh, I'll be darned.
That I'm aware of.
My sister lived in Grand Junction, Colorado, and she wanted to try growing coffee, and it didn't work so well. It's the climate's just, it's cool nights, and, you know, you need that steamy type, I guess.
But Shad, you said you're going to try to do that inside?
Yeah, I think I'll try to grow a couple plants. Now, it takes, I think, between 3 and 5 years before the coffee plant will cherry out. The pollinating, obviously, I'll have to keep it all inside because they're not very resistant to cold at all.
Right.
The one thing that I wonder about is most coffee is grown between like 1,500 and 2,200 feet. They call it high in the mountains, that's what it is. It's 1,500 to 2,200 feet. And we're at 4,500 feet, so I wonder about how much oxygen we actually have, how the plant would react to being twice the elevation of where it normally would.
But certainly after frost date, you could take it outside.
Yeah, I think that from June, July, in particular July and August, I think that the coffee plant would be just fine outside.
Because you'd need some pollinators to help
Absolutely,
you out.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah,
bees that are attracted to the caffeine that's in the flower of the coffee.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what keeps them going back.
Uh-huh. I'll be darned.
That little stimulant.
Huh. I know it wakes me up in the morning.
Yeah.
Keeps me going back for that cup of coffee first thing in the morning. So on that note, hey, on that coffee note, we're going to take a small break. We'll be right back.
Need some help mowing your lawn? Then let Levi's Lawn Care help you out this summer. Levi can mow your yard at very affordable prices. He starts at around $20 per week, and that includes mowing and trimming. Levi can also aerate your lawn and offers tree trimming and stump grinding. Let Levi take care of the mowing duties of your lawn this summer. Give him a call at 575-1626. That's 575-1626.
Not sure if you're on the right track? Platte Valley Bank can help keep your finances moving forward. Having a plan to save and spend can help build your financial confidence. Knowing you have the right savings plan can help build your financial success. With free tools like online banking and helpful products like automatic savings plans and budgeting tools, you are in control of your financial future. Start saving today at www.pvbank.com. You belong here.
Platte Valley Bank, member FDIC.
Does it seem like the grass is always greener in your neighbor's yard? Well, that's because your neighbor had Sunrise Sprinkler install an underground sprinkler system. Sunrise Sprinkler in Torrington is the top choice for underground sprinkler systems. Give Chris Miller a call at 575-4300. Sunrise Sprinkler can give you a free estimate on a sprinkler system, and you can find out about the many other services that they offer. Give them a call today at 575-4300. Sunrise Sprinkler in Torrington.
Ensuring your best wheat yield starts now with expert advice from Westco. Call one of our sales agronomists today to check your fields before top dressing to maximize your crop's potential and take advantage of one-pass weed and feed programs. Whether you need ground or aerial application, herbicide, fungicide, or fertilizer, Westco has the products, equipment, and people to meet your needs. Westco. Service. Solutions. Success.
Westco's your best value through and through.
Lawn getting that old, worn-out look? Having to water and mow too often? Then it's time to call Torrington Sod Farm. They'll be happy to visit with you and show you why sod is the right answer. Call 532-2777. Torrington Sod Farm has been serving the area since 1999 and pride themselves on their service, quality sod, and exceeding customer expectations. They look forward to serving you, so give them a call for a free quote at 532-2777. Torrington Sod Farm. They make it easy being green. Now through Saturday, March 16th, you can save 20% off trees and 10% off shrubs at Peaceful Prairie Nursery in Mitchell, Nebraska. Get ahead of spring planting and save on trees through Saturday. Mark your calendars for Tuesday, March 26th, as potato and onion sets will be in. Stay tuned for more updates from Peaceful Prairie Nursery in Mitchell.
The cherry on it, there's three ways to process it. Okay, so they do what they call just natural dry processing. They lay the, they spread them out on concrete, all the picked ripe coffee cherries, and they let it, they rotate it so it doesn't get fungus or rot, but all the cherry dries off, and then they process it either by hand or a machine and take all of the skin and whatever pulp or fruit is left off of the bean, and then they spread it out again and let it dry out.
So the pulp of fruit, they don't use that for anything?
Nope. They could possibly use it maybe for some fertilizer
or mulch
or something. The other way is they wet hull them. So they soak them in a big, huge, massive vat of water for anywhere between 1 and 3 days. And then they run it through a machine that just sucks all the pulp off of it. And the two beans come out.
So how do we get coffee beans off the tree? How do we get the coffee fruit off of the tree?
Did you guys remember Juan Valdez walking around picking it on the commercials?
Yeah.
Because I remember Juan Valdez, and I remember him putting his stuff in the sacks.
Yep.
But I don't, and putting it on the burrow, and he goes, "I'm Juan Valdez."
Yep.
But I don't remember him picking it off the tree.
So it doesn't grow uniformly like some of the plants that we would harvest around here where a machine would be able to do it. And I don't believe that the bushes are only about 3 to 5 feet tall.
So they don't shake it?
So I'm not sure that you can shake it and get it off. They're all pretty much hand-picked. Yes.
Well, and you can do that with nuts. When I was in Texas seeing my daughter, they have pecan trees and walnuts, and they shake them.
Yeah.
But I've never heard of them shaking
a coffee tree.
Well, I mean, it would be very similar, I believe, to shaking a cherry tree. There's still, when that cherry is ready to pick, it is still attached to that tree, relatively sturdy. When almonds or, whatever, are, when they shake those trees, the pecans, they're ready to come off.
So is a coffee, and you called it a cherry.
A cherry.
Is it like a, about the size of a Bing cherry?
No, there's probably on these beans, there would be only about maybe a quarter inch of meat around it, and they're oval shaped. But they do get the reddish purple when they're ready to be picked.
So these are these coffee beans that you've shown us are no bigger than a 22 lead, the lead on a 22 shell.
Yeah, it would be pretty similar to if you very similar to a chocolate covered almond is what it would be like the shape.
Oh, okay.
I mean, to all give you an idea of the shape of the, and the size, the,
and that's the cherry,
mm-hmm. And that's why those coffee beans are oval. The interesting thing about the pea berry that I had mentioned that has that only between, they say, 4 and 7%, it's a natural occurring thing. It just happens. And so instead of two stones or beans inside of growing inside of the cherry and sharing the caffeine that that cherry is producing through the plant, one bean is smaller and is round, is absorbing all of that caffeine. And so the pea berry, not only 4 to 7% of is all that is produced, comes out worldwide, it has significantly more caffeine in it than a regular coffee bean.
Desirable or undesirable? I mean, it gets blended, right?
Well, yeah, so one of my favorites to do, and I don't, we don't sell this one, is a medium. I roast the pea berry medium, and then I grind it for an espresso. And I can drink a lot of coffee, and my brother can drink a lot of coffee because that's what we do. We're blending and sampling it a lot. And one shot of that will light my fire from one in the afternoon until five. I'm good. I'm good on that.
No, Chad, I can't drink coffee. I have a cup, and then I on Wednesdays I have another cup. And if I don't quit drinking by 9 o'clock, I can't sleep.
I am the same way. I have trouble sleeping if I. We used to do Myrna and I used to go to a lot of banquets, and at the banquet they'd serve something sweet like a cake or something, and yeah, you'd kind of like to wash it down with a little coffee. Well, my Aunt Twinkle said, well, Jerry, why don't you just have hot water?
Oh.
And I said,
yeah.
Interesting. So started drinking hot water, and I was able to sleep after a banquet. But the nights that I drank coffee, gee, I'd have a hard time. We had a drywaller that I knew as a friend, and he made drywall looking so easy. But he would get up in the middle of the night and drink a cup of cold coffee. In the middle of the night, he'd wake up like normally some of us wake up to go to the bathroom. Well, he'd wake up, go to the bathroom, but then he'd grab that coffee. Or he'd put the coffee in the microwave and drink it up.
Wow. I mean, I can't do that.
I can't do that either.
So you said that you did 2 pounds at a time. How many pounds are you doing now? Did you get a new...
We did get a new roast. We got two new roasters. It came in a big unit. We use what they call a fluid bed air roaster. So it's not the drums that people will see with the circulating arm that kind of flips the beans over on a heated surface. This looks like a giant... These two roasters look like giant popcorn poppers. And we can control the amount of heat and the amount of loft or air that blows up through the roaster and then the exhaust. We have a 10-pound. We can do 10 pounds at once of coffee, which is a big roast. And the other one is a 3-pound, which we use most of the time.
Once roasted... How long is coffee, a bag of coffee, actually good for?
So there's a couple factors that go into that. One, if it's maintained in whole bean, it'll last longer. You can't, if you notice coffee packaging in stores, there's no window to see the bean because light, even UV light, will degrade the quality of the bean. But I've had coffee that we roasted 8 months ago, and it sealed up in a bag
right.
With a one-way valve, so no air's getting to it. But that one-way valve is for after when you roast it, it's going to off-gas CO2 for about 3 days.
Okay.
And that allows the CO2 to leave.
Now, do you freeze it? Coffee beans? What do you think?
That's a big no. I
saw him starting to squirm and no.
And my grandmother would have keep her coffee in the freezer and swore up and down that the Folgers was better. And I don't see any benefit to that whatsoever. Room temperature in an airtight container that isn't receiving any light.
Now, do you like the coffee makers that grind right before the coffee is made?
So that is the absolute best way to have a cup of coffee as far as flavor profile, is grinding right before you roast it. The one thing that's unique about us, because we obviously sell bags of our coffee, but we don't roast anything. We don't have any roasted product. So we won't roast until we get that order.
Oh.
And so they're getting the freshest coffee. Whoever buys it, you're having the freshest coffee possible.
Well, this is really interesting.
It is interesting.
You know, we have learned so much just by this brief encounter with you. So hopefully we've talked to you a little bit about maybe what to do about your tomato plants.
Yes.
We now know not to put our coffee in the freezer and to...
Tom, you can
do whatever you want to, you know, but it's interesting to know to keep your coffee out of the light.
Yep.
Any kind of light.
Yep.
Keep it dark, 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 and to use it, if you're going to grind right before you drink.
Well, and that's preferably to do that, but if you grind the day before, or it is still going to be good.
Right.
I can tell you the pre-ground stuff that people are buying on the shelves, if you think about the process, they don't know how long that coffee's been sitting there, because they had to roast it, the company did, then they had to package it, then they had to package it for shipping, and then they sent it to a warehouse until they sold it, and then it went on a truck until it was delivered, and then they backstock it, and so it could be, that coffee could really be 9 to 12 months old.
So the ground coffee, and we're not going to say any product names,
right,
but the ground coffee that's in the pods that you just put it in.
Yeah.
So we're going to call that pod coffee.
Pod coffee, because there's several manufacturers of it.
What's that like? Is that the still the same thing, 7 to 8 years old?
Well, and I can't speak to how old their coffee is or how often it is they produce it. I know that there's several different coffee companies that are well known across the United States that sell pods. And so I don't know what their manufacturing process looks like. But those pods are airtight and no sun is getting
right
to them, even though they're generally white, you know, but they have the foil top on top. And so that's if it's packaged relatively quickly after it's roasted and off gas, then it is probably okay. And that's something that we've looked at, is those machines to manufacture pods are expensive.
Yes, they are. Dang it, and it's the convenience.
It is, for sure.
Gosh, it's convenient. So, older coffee still tastes good, even if you backlogged it for 6 to 8 months. I know that beans, like pinto beans, if you buy them off the shelf at the grocery store, they're much older than if you go down to our beanery here and buy last year's beans. And they cook faster with last year's beans. We tried to make some bean soup the other day, and we cooked those beans for 3 days and once overnight.
So
and they were so hard we couldn't eat them.
Here's something interesting. We were talking about crop rotations with tomatoes. They do crop rotations oftentimes after 20 years. But especially in Nicaragua, there's been several times when we've roasted a Nicaraguan bean and I'm packaging it, that I'll find a black bean in it that has went through the roasting process. And there's been a couple times where there's been a popcorn has popped. I didn't put it there.
No.
It came from the Nicaraguan bean. So we've pulled it out and re-roasted. But yeah, so that's just interesting.
So they rotate with black beans and maybe some popcorn?
Maybe. I that's the only thing that I can figure out to explain why the Nicaraguan bean has... And we probably find one or two is all a year, but
it's still in there.
It's still in it, and the popcorn we found like probably 4 or 5 over the course of the last 6 years of coffee roasting.
Yeah, how interesting.
Yeah,
so you know
we keep them all.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you know you see a wheat field and you see a lone standing corn stalk in there,
or rye, or a
sunflower.
Yeah,
you know.
And the people that accept the wheat dock you for having too much rye in your wheat.
Now, can you see that?
Can you tell? Rye is way higher, way taller. And so you
But go the seed, if you're looking at seed then?
You can tell from the seed, the rye, I believe, is larger.
Huh.
When I worked for a guy out on Bear Creek, he would send me out with a clippers. They use Roundup now, and I would clip the heads off. And it was a really crummy job.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've all had crummy jobs, I think. So some of the things that I saw on the research when I was looking up the pH, some of the things that do thrive in high pH, just for your information, beets, beans, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, garlic, kale, and pea. Now, I'm sure that they're peas. I'm sure that there's other things that will grow. But for a tomato, you want that pH to be somewhere between 6.2 and 6.8.
Okay.
Now, I've done soil samples at our house, and I urge you to do soil samples at your house as well. And have you done soil samples before?
I have
so
not.
So you kind of grid out your land, and you take a soil sample in each grid. So
okay.
If you
How
had,
big are the grids?
If you're a 50 by 50, I take 9 samples.
Out of that, 50 by 50?
Yeah.
Okay.
I take about 9 samples. Tom? What do you think?
Well, we sampled soils with drills at Holly when I worked for them, and that's about right. We would go, this is really hard on pickups, don't do it. We were leasing them from Jelco out of Chicago. Instead of driving down the road, we'd go across that field. I'm talking, it was a ride.
Oh, yeah.
And we'd do it like 80 acres. We'd do probably not enough, but we did 10 samples in a field.
Oh, wow.
And then we'd process them and go from there.
So in a garden, that's what we try to do is about 9 samples in a 50 by 50 is what we have as well. And then you blend all those together. And you can get a soil sample shovel, I think, at our extension office. They'll loan you one. And it goes down about 6 or 7 inches. And then you blend all that together, and then you just give them a package full of
the
soil
blended samples,
and they have that sack at the extension office.
Oh, fantastic!
Yeah,
and
then you send
really
it off.
They used to send them off to UW, the ag department, and sample them there. I don't know if they're still doing.
I don't know where they do it. Anyway, ours was 9.2. My neighbor and I, and I'm like going, holy cow! No wonder nothing grows in my yard.
Yeah.
So that's why we're going to, I think I told you, I'm gonna take my tomato plant, and for tomatoes, they like to have them either grow horizontal underneath the ground, because each little node is going to gather more roots, or you plant them deep. What do you do, Tom? Plant them deep, or?
I do both.
I do both as well.
It's fun to experiment and see what works the best for you.
So if you grow them horizontally, and then you just bend up the last 4 inches or so.
Right, yeah. So do you do that with, are some species of tomatoes better horizontally planted? Like, are Romas better horizontally than?
I don't think it really matters.
Just make sure you plant them deep enough so they'll root up the stem. They'll root out, and you okay. lay
each junction of leaves
right.
will have roots growing off of it.
And okay. don't pull the cotyledons, the first leaves on the bottom, because it damages the plant and it gives a chance for disease. So just leave the cotyledons on. They'll
fall off, won't they?
They'll fall off, yeah.
Now, I have a friend that he takes, after he's planted and after the cotyledons obviously come off, he strips them about a foot high.
See, but Jerry, I don't do that because injuring, it gives a chance for organisms
to come in.
And that's why I don't pull the leaves off. And they'll work good even if you bury them really deep with very little sticking out. They'll root on
sure.
that stem, and make sure that you clean your tools as you're pruning. if you prune tomatoes, and I do because I've got ones that are, what is it called, Jerry, where it just keeps growing.
Oh, indeterminate.
Indeterminate. And cherry tomatoes are typically bad about that.
So there's two styles, determinate, which will grow a specified height, and they're usually considered like a bush tomato, or you can think of it as a bush, and then undeterminate, hell, it'll just grow forever.
So is all this is information is on those little things they put in there with the picture of the tomato?
No.
Oh, because I'm like, I just look at the picture. That tomato looks great. I want that one.
But make sure you get the resistant type. It doesn't mean you won't get the wilt, but it really does help. I do sweet 100s. I just like the flavor. I've done yellow with purple top cherry tomatoes. And I used to plant tons of tomatoes, but anymore I grew everything. I grew 240 plants, and I made sure they were, and then I gave them away, you know, to my friends. And but I don't do that anymore. I just go out to one of the greenhouses, take your pick, and they have wilt resistant. And it's right on the tag.
Okay.
Now, way important, when we were growing pumpkins, if somebody was smoking a pipe or a cigar or a cigarette, they did not get to enter our garden.
Because like
tobacco mosaic.
Okay. Does it look like the wilts?
Terrible, yeah. Doesn't it?
I used to spit on my cucumbers because they get it too. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't spit on them.
Because let the audience know, you chewed.
Yeah.
And you used to spit chewed tobacco on your...
No, I'm just...
Oh, you're kidding. Okay.
Yeah. I knew.
I've known you I've known you for a long time. So yeah, tobacco mosaic. Tom, what do you think it looks like?
Your leaves just start dying, and you can spot it a mile away. Do you like cucumbers?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I do those English ones, the long skinny ones.
Yeah,
because you can eat the skin.
Right.
And it's not bitter.
Now is it burpless?
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I really like them. They're my favorite. And every year I try, and I've had some. The thing is, sometimes you just have a crop failure, you know?
Yeah, and that's always a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have high pH,
increases it.
Increases your risk.
Okay.
And so talk to Jeff about getting a soil sample
absolutely.
And take it in, and the university is really good about it. They are big into horticulture, at least when I was there.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
You have to be in this area, right?
Yes. Well, to send a soil sample out?
You'd have to be big into horticulture for in Goshen County.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, we're in an agricultural.
We are. And, you know, Myrna and I do it for stress relief. You know, instead of thinking we're going to go choke somebody, we just go out in the garden and... hack some weeds out.
There you go.
Yeah. So
I roast coffee.
Yeah, you roast coffee.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Yes.
Tom, John, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And this is going to be our last episode for the winter edition. We'll start our regular scheduled programming once a week starting in April. Thank you, everybody.